Jesus Christ, Ed, that took forever. Who the fuck taught you how to fly, man? Who said anyone taught me how to fly?
Hey, whoa. I'm just glad we're touching down on solid ground. You guys can dicker all you want. We're in L.A. I'm gonna go hit up a taco stand. Come get me when you guys are done. Oh my god, these are so good. Oh. Amigo, dos más, por favor. Oh, these guys are missing out.
All right, Zom. We hashed it out. We're good now. Corpse's conversation. Talking about the LA gang riots and the drug lords and everything. And I have a feeling that major shit's gonna go down here. Whoa. Oh my god, not again.
I don't know why you guys brought me here. I liked it better when I was in the sky. God damn it.
Well, I don't know why you brought us in the fucking jungle, but we did it. We
gotta do our mission. We gotta get into.
I love the fact that you went from taking us out of a jungle and dropping us into a concrete jungle. Los Angeles of all places? Are you for real, Ed?
Ed, to live and die in L.A., man. To live and die in L.A.
Living down LA, where everybody try to fatten their pocket. So many hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing, currency chasing worldwide through the
whole. All right, man.
That's the truth.
Tell them why we're here, Ed.
All right. I have a feeling that whatever we experienced at that last jungle is here. Part 2, Predator 2.
Sneaky bastard killed my partner and friend, but not before he found its lethal weapon, not made of elements from this earth. It's a fucking alien, keep my words. The dumb demon killed half my crew. It can't be stopped, don't know what to do. So, policeman, it's up to you. Avenge our deaths and see this through.
There's movement all over the place. Must be cut this under so fast pace. It's not fair, that cookie's too advanced. Come on, you bastard, let's dance!
I'm only bad.
The 1990 sequel, starring Danny Glover, directed by Stephen Hopkins.
Yeah, who also actually directed A Nightmare on Elm Street by...
Dream Child.
Which was by far the worst nightmare, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah, much like that t-shirt you're wearing. And for those who don't know, he's actually wearing a t-shirt related to a wrestler called the American Nightmare who made the worst career decision to jump ship. But that's for a later episode and another time.
All right, guys. I'm going to start with you, Zom. What'd you think about this movie?
Well, I mean, for me, I'm going to be a fan of it no matter what, because it's in the hometown base of where we grew up. And especially for me, it's all in L.A. and downtown L.A. Technically by the avenues and where the fashion district stuff was and all that. So right off the bat, I loved it. Initially, when I was around the age and I saw the movie, I kind of didn't understand why it went from jungle really quick to like it's in a city setting. So I was really thrown off about it. But when I rewatched the episode a couple years later, I kind of put two and two together and figured it out. And for us doing the episode, I went and rewatched it about two more times. And I go, okay, I get it now. I see where they're going with it. But yeah, the movie was really well done. I like the fact that he did it during the LA riot time period, because that plays into the fact that that's what would have attracted another predator to go over there, because we're fighting against one another and it's a warrior scenario type thing, which I thought was really cool. But it was more so the fact that I loved the fact that they made the movie around the agenda of the LA riots and what was going on and how the police... It felt, for me personally, it did have like a little element. It felt like a... RoboCop almost, because it was like that Detroit city is under fire, the place is all jacked up, they're going at it, they're tooth and nail. So I really like that about it. My only gripe, and I know we're going to get into it because we talked about it, Major TJ there, was I wasn't 100% sold on Danny Glover. I love him as an actor, but it was too close around the time for him doing Lethal Weapon and other movies like that to where it pulled away from the realism of him being a standout character in this type of movie for me personally. But the movie overall was really good.
I'm going to quote Chief Wiggum, shut your word hole.
Shut your word hole.
Totally disagree with you on the Danny Glover part. But anyways, actually, wasn't this pre-riots? I believe the riots happened in 92, and I know this movie came out in 1990. I mean, I could be right or wrong. I don't know
if anybody remembers. I want to say, yeah, 1992 is when the riots started happening.
It was great foreshadowing by the directors and the producers. They felt it coming.
They looked into the future, and they're like, holy shit, we got to put this on film.
Very true.
But here's a little fun fact, though. Danny Glover wasn't the first initial choice. This is really cool. I didn't know this. But Stephen Hopkins actually was leaning towards Patrick Swayze to play Mike.
I heard about that.
Yeah, but they couldn't get him. I think what I originally read was that this film had like six different scripts. They had like multiple ideas. They did their best to try to bring back Arnold Schwarzenegger to be Dutch, and he was going to team up with Patrick Swayze's versions of Hannigan, but clearly, obviously, it didn't work out. But I love Danny Glover. I think he did a great job with what he was given, and the whole cast, too. I mean,
so before we continue, Ed, what did you think of the movie overall?
Personally, this is my favorite Predator. I think this is one of those sequels that just umped the ante, the gore, the violence, to the point where this film was almost NC-17. A lot of stuff was cut out of this film.
A lot.
And that's why I messed with this one a lot more than the others. And again, being in that concrete jungle, where it's like, oh, you're now not even safe in the streets of L.A. I'm fighting this thing. And he's now a predator, not dealing with military men, but just regular cops. So it's like, okay, cool. Let's see how they do. Can they fight this thing? And I just love this one. Like, it's just so cool, the environment, and hearing, you know, oh yeah, we're going down street in Alvarado, oh yeah, I'm from Rampart Station. It's like, okay, this is so cool, and all the references of LA street. So, and being born and raised in LA, it's a really, really fun film for me.
I'm gonna actually have to agree with Ed here. This is probably my favorite Predator film. I believe I actually saw this first before the original. Maybe that has something to do with it. But I get your side of the story, Zom, but I think the characters in this sequel were a little more fleshed out than the previous film. So, Zom, I'm actually going to have to agree with Ed. This is probably my favorite Predator film in the franchise. Maybe because I saw it first before the original. But it's just something about this. It's just, I mean, I don't really show a lot of LA pride, but like when it comes to this movie, I do. But yeah, like I think the characters were more fleshed out and a little more developed in the original instead of the big beefy hulking guys in the jungle. These were simple folks doing simple jobs. And I don't want to say simple because, you know, being an LA cop isn't easy. But compared to like a military team, yeah, that's a big difference.
I mean, I agree with you there, but again, I'm not harping on Danny Glover. I'm a fan of Danny Glover, but because those movies came out around the same time period of him being a cop again, like I was waiting for Riggs to come out of nowhere to help him out in Predator 2, and I was waiting for like other characters like that.
And see, that's the thing. I think that's what separates this from the first one, or even the third one, or even the fourth one for that matter. Danny Glover, and this movie gave his time to shine as a main character. Yeah, he split the bill with Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon, yada, yada, yada. But take Mel Gibson out of the equation, what do you have? He still did a very good job, and he was, I think his character here was way better than his character in Lethal Weapon. That's just my opinion. I like the Lethal Weapon movies as well, but still, like, this more solidified him as a action actor. I wish he would have done more, but obviously that didn't go that route. It was still great nonetheless.
Well, Major, I agree with you there because the writing, of course, was more in the direction of him being an action star for Predator 2 more than it was comedic writing for the comedy element of Lethal Weapon. But for me, it was the one thing that I was so used to seeing him as a cop and a detective that this was technically almost the same damn thing, a carbon copy going into a different movie. But it was him being an action star in this, which was fine. It was good to see him, like you said, step out of that comedic role and play a more serious cop-style action star role, which was cool. The one thing I will say that threw me for a loop rewatching it for the second time. I had no freaking idea, and that's a kudos to the acting of this gentleman. I had no freaking idea that Bill Paxton was in this movie until I watched it again. I went, dude, that is freaking Bill Paxton. That is awesome.
Wait, when you watched it again, like when you were younger or recently?
Most recently, when I was younger, I didn't really know who he was because I didn't really watch Aliens until very later on. Even Terminator till very later on, so I never knew he was in those movies. So when I saw him in this one, the way he played the character was so completely different than what I'm used to seeing him do. It took me a minute. I had to like really go, son of a bitch, that's Bill Paxton. That's freaking awesome, man.
Well, I don't know if you know this, I'm pretty sure Ed does. So Bill Paxton was actually the only actor, Lance Hendricks, debatable, depending on who you ask, but he was killed by an alien, a predator, and the Terminator. That's a good resume, if you ask me.
So let me ask you this, Major TJ and Corporal Ed there, since we're just mentioning the awesomeness that is Bill Paxton, what if they gave him the leading role in Predator 2? I think he would have knocked it out the park.
Nah, it wouldn't have worked. He was there for comedy relief.
Yeah, but he's still, again, just like Danny Glover, he's a comedic actor and he's also a serious actor. I think he'd have done really well as like an action star in this one.
I could see him doing it, but I think I love Glover in the role. And at the same time, I was like, man, what if Swayze did take that role? That would have been so dope. But I think Bill Paxton would have given his own spin, because I feel like sometimes he gets typecast a lot to kind of be kind of a goofball sometimes, Bill Paxton. But when he shines in a serious role, he shines.
I did love the fact that Danny Glover's hair looked like Wesley Snipes' hair from Blade. That was awesome, though. Like, spot on, almost identical.
What they call that, the widow's peak type of thing?
Yeah, he had like that full, the middle arch and the side arches. He had the full widow's peak thing going.
Like Ed said earlier, the movie actually came out November 21st, 1990. Directed by Stephen Hopkins, it was written by the Thomas Brothers. The budget was $20 to $30 million, and it grossed on the box office $57.1 million. That's still a lot, not as much as the original did. Not necessarily saying that's a bad thing. I just think with the absence of Arnold Schwarzenegger, it kind of hurted the movie a little bit. During that time, they were negotiating with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was actually kind of considering the return, but he had a tough choice to make. It was either Predator 2 or Terminator 2, because they were filming around the same time. And look what happened. Obviously, Terminator 2 is a classic on all standards. But like I said, we'll maybe get into that later down the line. That's the choice that they made, so they had to do constant rewrites, like Ed said earlier.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with Arnold, but it seems like, and we'll discuss it further down the road with all the other sequels, but it also just seems like he's just not interested in coming back to Predator. Every time he gets offered to come back to any sequel, he just always turns it down for some reason. I don't know whether he's just not happy with the franchise, or he just wants to keep with what he did with as Dutch in the first one.
Do you think he was like kind of ashamed of it? I don't know.
Why not? It's one of his most iconic roles. But I would like to see him come back as old man Dutch and, you know, fight along with more predators. Maybe learn more, see what he's been up to, and see if they do the whole, like we discussed in our last episode, did he have that, you know, radiation poisoning? Like, how did he deal with it and stuff like that? Which actually, that reminds me, on the novelization of Predator 2, it brings up Dutch. And it also clarifies that he did have radiation poisoning and that he escaped from the hospital. And ever since, he just went missing after that.
Did he go to another chopper?
Okay, so per the Dutch tapes, when you guys made that mention in the book and for the resource material for the fans to look up, I listened to them all. And that was from the video game Predator Hunting Ground. You hear Dutch talk about it at the end that he had some type of experimental surgery and operations done to him to prolong his life due to the radiation sickness, and how he was like 78 and he was like moving around like a 40-year-old or whatever reference he made. So he could in fact be in another Predator movie. But my thinking for him looking at the whole scenario of things, I think he thinks it's, and I say this with humor behind it, but I term it as the Sigourney Weaver scenario. Because they brought her back for all those other Alien movies, and at one point she became like a duplicate cyborg thing because she originally died. He didn't want to have a watered down actuality, like something happening to the Dutch character like that. So I think that's why he's kind of shied away from it. He didn't want to like devolve the character of Dutch, how he miraculously survived the first warrior fight with this predator and just have it, you know, start chopping down and chopping down as you move forward with it. So strategically, I think it's a little bit of a smart move on his end.
Yeah, I don't want another Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines.
Or Salvation.
Well, apparently that's how I felt about Predators, but we'll talk about that the next episode.
Yeah, that'll be the next episode.
I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys know this, and hopefully our listeners know this. The City Hunter was actually played by Kevin Peter Hall once again, but unfortunately it was his last time appearing as the antagonist.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll go on record stating it again. Like I said in the first episode that we did for the Predathon, talking about the 1987 Predator, no one could duplicate that process of how well he portrayed a Predator. It's like, for me, and I'm sure we've talked about it before, I'm still a Kane Hodder guy when it comes to Jason, and that's the same scenario when it comes to Kevin Peter. Like, you can pull off Predator, but you're never going to pull it off as great as he did. And he knocked it out the park again for part two with Predator 2.
Yeah, revisiting the film, I felt like I love that you can distinguish the two different Predators, because I feel like in Predator 2, he played it much more aggressive, much more savage. And it's like, yeah, he revisited the character, but he understood that this is not the same Predator. This is a different one. And this one's more savage. He's more violent. And you see that in the body language and the way he just fights or takes on people. It's like, you have to respect that, because sometimes, you know, maybe certain stunt people, you know, will put on that heavy makeup and not take it too seriously because they can't do much. But he took that job serious and got into that mentality of, no, okay, I'm going to do something different, because obviously the design for the Predator and this one's a little different as well. And I believe the director said something about how you having different snakes. He compared it to snakes. And he gave, this is now a cobra. He's a venomous cobra. And he played it very well. And you know, shout out to Peter Hall, man. He did such an amazing job with this.
So I feel like this version, City Hunter, was actually probably younger than the Jungle Hunter. I don't remember. I'm not sure, or I can't recall. Because the Jungle Hunter seemed more calm and patient. And the City Hunter seemed a little more rambunctious, like he just wanted to get in there and fuck shit up. I mean, I got that vibe. What about you guys? What do you guys think?
Oh, he was definitely more blood-hungry. You can tell just by how he was, rather than scouting and hunting for victims, he was in the thick of it going, look at what they're doing. He goes, oh, man, I'm going to have a good old time. They're already fighting themselves. I'm going to pick up where I need to pick up here. It's going to be great.
Wait.
Yeah, exactly what Zom said. It no longer seemed like a sport. It was just him having fun. He was just having fun.
Wait, guys, that one. I'm sorry. I thought I heard something. All right, go on.
Oh, God damn it. I should sit on the helicopter.
Major, are you kidding me?
No, I saw something in those trees. I don't know.
No.
Fantastic.
Can I go back?
Oh, I wish I was back at the taco stand. Jesus Christ.
You didn't even bring me a taco.
Hey, you missed out, man.
Anyways, gentlemen, what I liked about this sequel, it actually explores more of the Predator or Yautja lore. I mean, they did have comic books after the first film, but this just added to it. They had added more layers and layers with, you know, the backstory, the culture, the weaponry, and a lot more that we saw here than we did in the original. And the original was just a wham-bam kind of type thing. When we get towards the end of this review, you'll know what we're talking about. But yeah, it's just, I think it just explained a little more. And I think that's why it just hits you all at once.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And seeing the culture of the Predators having honor and giving Hartigan a weapon at the end. Just like, okay, you defeated one of our own, so respect, we're going to let you live. So seeing that, that was cool, because obviously in the original, you just saw Dutch and that Predator just go at it. And it was just like, no, okay, either I'm going to kill you, you're going to kill me. Now we're seeing Predator 2, you see that honor. It's like, oh, This is weird. They're more than just savages, more than just predators. They have a code, and I thought that was pretty cool that they added that.
Ed, I know you're scared, man. It's okay. You don't have to stutter. Like, you said it again. You said Hargan. It's Harrigan. Harrigan, Apollo Crews, whatever. It's okay, man. Come on. We got your back.
Hardy har har.
Hey, Major, you know our nerves are still fried. We just got out of the jungle, and we got dropped back into this bucket of bullshit. And come on, we're all going to be on edge a little bit. And while I'm on that topic there, Major and Corporal Ed, the other thing I liked about this movie is how they catered to the fact they kept it that old school style of action movie for the time period. They tried to pack all kinds of good stuff into this. And I mean, my favorite thing was how overemphasized they were with the drugs and the gangs fighting one another, especially the Jamaican gang. I mean, if that wasn't a nod to Papa Shango, oh my God, like they really overdid that whole Jamaican voodoo loving gang war thing. That was too much. I mean, it was great, but it was just too much.
I know you were trying to scare me, huh? You did a pretty good job, man. Stop it now. I can pay you $2 million, man, in cash.
This is not about money. This is about power. New king in the streets. This message he has for your people. You are history. Fucking history. Get that puto.
What the fuck are you doing now, man? You're crazy!
King really says, not only do I have to kill you, but I have to take your soul. Voodoo magic. Fucking voodoo magic, man. But you know what? I tell you what I believe. Shit happens.
So it was the Scorpios against the Jamaican Voodoo Posse. That sounds like a band name, man. I love that name. Jamaican Voodoo Posse.
Yeah, it was dope that they added all of that with the different gangs. Because obviously, if you grow up in LA, you know there are all kinds of gangs doing various types of mischievous people out in these streets. So it was cool that they added that and just had fun with it. It was just, even though it's, we're in 1990, it still had that 80s cheese, like classic to it. Still had that vibe. So that was just fun with it. And even when this movie opens, you know, with that shootout, it's like, Zom said it best. It reminded me of RoboCop. It had a very RoboCop vibe. And I was just like, okay, we're in this. We're in the LA streets. They handled this, even the cinematography and all the bullets flying everywhere. It was a fun film, man, just even right when it opens.
Speaking of the whole gang violence and everything, I didn't know about this until I did my research on this, but apparently the Crips watched over the entire film crew, I guess as for added protection. I don't know how that came about, but you know, Stephen Hopkins went on record and said, yeah, they watched our back the entire time of filming. I'm like, it's not like you walk up on the street and say, hey, can you protect us? I don't know. Maybe they were fans of the first one. That's kind of trippy.
Well, actually, the way that came about was originally this movie was going to be in New York. Due to their budget, they weren't able to film out there, so they decided to go to L.A. But the problem was, during production, they had problems with closing down the streets. So they were having issues with citizens disrupting their shooting. So that's when the Crips came in, because they actually were fans of the original. And they were so happy that, you know, there's a Predator movie filming in our streets. So that's why they stepped in, as in to get people in line to not disturb the filming of Predator 2.
That's insane, man. I mean, that's kind of cool, but it's just weird at the same time, you know what I'm saying?
Major, like, and Corporal, that, I mean, I have to agree with you, Major, that just shows, even though I may not have liked his portrayal in the movie itself, but that just shows you the acting caliber and the pull that Danny Glover had when he was like, he had to go old school and like, hey guys, I need you to take care of this for me. Like, we got you, DG, don't even worry about it. I mean, it's impressive. And the fact that they were able to do that for the whole movie, I mean, it's beautiful the way they did it. Now, I always laugh. There's a couple things here I wanted to point out, kind of fan theory on my part for me being good old Sergeant Zom here. I think this Predator was also a little more aggressive for the amount of cocaine that was around, because those guys were getting lit. He must have been getting some kind of residual dust kicking up in the air towards them, because, I mean, he was aggressively going after dudes. So, I mean, could you imagine if there was an actual part in some script somewhere, they said, Predator got a little contact high from the cocaine. That's why he was on a super killing rampage, dead, like just a spree. I could totally see that happening and freak me the hell out again.
What the hell was that? Hey, man. If you were doing cocaine, that's on you, bro. I don't care. You still made an awesome movie. I don't need you right now, dude. We just dealt with your other guy. Like, relax. Give me a minute, alright? Trying to enjoy tacos here. Fucking Christ's sakes, man.
You know what? Like we said earlier, this film was heavily edited. Cut a lot of scenes out. So you never know. Maybe they had a scene where he was like, yeah, you know, just inhaling that stuff.
Takes that one bump and he's like, yeah.
Yeah, NC-17 cut, like Ed said.
Give me the NC-17 cut. I want to see it now. Predator on cocaine. Let's go.
So, Corporal and Major, with you guys saying that, since there was so much footage cut, and now we're in this day and age of like these Blu-ray remastered and 4K remastered editions, do you think we'd ever get a chance, since it's that helm of Zack Snyder leading the way, we would ever get like a unedited full version, like hardcore R-rated version of the film? Because I think that would add to the caliber of what Predator 2 already is.
That would sell like crazy. Like, I know the director just did, I think the movie just passed its 30th anniversary, so they did an interview with him. I'm not exactly sure if he was talking about an uncut version, but that would be great because, yeah, like we said earlier, NC-17, there was supposed to be more gore, more violence, more cocaine. But, you know, hopefully one day, I would love to see that.
Honestly, I don't think we'll ever see it. Because just now that 20th Century Fox is under the Disney umbrella, they probably just have no desire to really do anything with it. Obviously, we have Prey coming out soon. But let's see what the future holds. Because I feel like they're not going to go back. Just like, yeah, let's do an NC-17 version of this film and release it on Hulu or something. Because they probably don't see anything in the game. Because so far, the Predator films don't do very well in the box office. You know, it's usually hit or miss.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys with that. There's definitely other things about the movie I wanted to point out that I thought was funny. We all see the sequence when they're on the side of the building and, you know, Danny Glover's character is chasing the Predator. And they have the coming down the long pipe and the pipe breaks away from the wall and the Predator goes crashing into the other building.
Okay, pussy face. It's your move.
Shit happens.
For a Predator being as big and as heavy as he was, I think it would have done a lot more damage crashing into that building than they actually let on to. I would have loved to have seen him like drop one floor and then land in the room, because it would have gave more degree of like just how massive these Predators are. Again, me personally, I would have loved to see that. And then secondly, I don't know if you guys saw this, because we haven't mentioned it and we gotta put it out there, but we were fortunate enough to get a awesome Gary Busey in the movie. He knocked it out the park as that character. He was a SOB and I loved every bit of him.
Oh, he was a total douchebag in this movie, but that was his character.
I'd like a word with you in private, please. They say that persistence is one of your most outstanding qualities.
Hey, look, I know this is your show, but
now, you're not listening to me. You got a big nose, and you're sticking it too far in my business. Now maybe you can hear this. The next time you cross me, you're gonna turn up missing. And you get the hell out of here.
Who the hell are you, Keith?
The last person in the world you want to fuck with.
Yeah, but there's a scene there where I think they're by the courts of L.A. and you see them go across the street. For some reason, I picked up on this. I don't know why, again, with me, certain details. If you go back and watch that scene where they're walking across the street, there is three identical red Mustangs in one shot on the street as you see Danny Glover walk by. Three red Mustangs. Like, normally when you see scene placement and photo placement, they would make sure they alternate that a little bit so that way it's not all clumped in one cluster, but it's literally three red Mustangs in traffic right next to one another. It was the weirdest thing, and the only reason why it stuck out to me is because you see this big blob of red behind Danny Glover. You go, there's three identical red Mustangs right behind Danny Glover in Predator 2. Huh.
Maybe that was a hint that we were going to see more than one Predator in this film. Maybe it was a foreshadowing.
So for you, Major and Corporal Ed, since you guys heard me mention that, I guess that's a good one we can talk about. What did you guys think about that chase and fight sequence they had? The one I was referring to when you see them fall off, you know, the building and all that.
You know, it's interesting that you mention that, but before we actually talk about that, I want to actually talk about the death of the Lone Ranger, Bill Paxton's character, and Lieutenant Leona. Now,
just take a deep breath, loosen your sphincters. Don't need any rush hour Rambos there.
Sit on the motherfucking baby. Drop it and sit down. Tell it!
Leona! Choke out! This is it! In the cooler! In the train! Get these people out of here!
Jenny!
Oh, God damn it!
Obviously, the city hunter did not kill the lieutenant because she was pregnant. Now, that was one of those unsolved questions, like, well, who'd she get pregnant? And for years, I always thought, like, okay, well, maybe Bill Paxton and her hooked up and stuff. No, actually not. She was actually married. It was one in the deleted scenes that her husband was introduced. So she was married, and both of them didn't know that they were expecting. I mean, obviously, the Yautja did. That's why he didn't do anything to her. But see, I don't want to call it haterade, but it's just little nitpicks that they kind of just either didn't think it was necessary to the plot, or, you know, they're like, it just slipped through the cracks and like, oops, we just left that in there. Because like for years, I was like, okay, well, who's the daddy? You know, and you find out she was married to another lieutenant in the force, but obviously we didn't see that. So it just kind of leaves over like a halo, like, or a question mark. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you pointing that out. And I'm glad you mentioned the character because it reminds me of two other things that my brain was stewing on. I love the fact that they repurposed the universal ride of Earthquake. That was the subway system you saw when they shot that whole sequence. That was really cool.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
The second part to that really threw me for a loop. And I was like, whoa, because, again, now this is going back to when they showed movies on, you know, TV before the rating system was 100% and they were doing crazy edits. Now, it could be my brain playing tricks on me, but I could have sworn when I saw Predator 2 when I was younger that scene you're talking about, Major, I could have swore that he actually tore the baby out of Homegirl, because there's a scene in Predator 2, I remember him like sitting on a gargoyle pillar, almost like Batman, and he pulls the spine out of something again.
No, that, well, the baby wouldn't really have a spine, but no, that was Bill Paxton's spinal cord and skull.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's my brain playing tricks on me, because I was like, yeah, because that much of a savage, she sacrificed the kid. Like, that's gnarly.
We'll get into those type of Yautjas later in another episode. But for the most part, Yautjas have a strict code of honor. They don't hurt anyone that's unarmed or pregnant women.
Now, let's definitely talk about this, Corporal and Major, of the evolution, how they were showing us the story process of the evolution of the Predators. This is a different Predator we see in Part 2, of course. And he kind of, like, shows you how they learn on the fly type of scenario. Because that one scene where the recon team's going after him, and they have him in that isolated, I guess, meat locker or place where they butcher animals, and they have everything under UV light, because he can't really see it, but you see him smarten up as a Predator, and he stops at one point because his natural senses are going off, and then you see him start cycling through his arm gauntlet, and he starts changing the overlay of the sensory perception he has, and he finally picks one, and he goes, "Oh, you sneaky SOBs, like, I see you now."
Target's still moving, heading towards the number 2 stairwell.
Playing right into it.
Wait a minute. It stopped. It's moving back against the wall. Backing up. It's moving away from them.
You see them, Garber. Your boys have been made.
Sir, it's circling around behind them.
Get them out, Garber. They're walking to your trap. Get them out!
Well, see, that's what this movie explained, rather than the first one, that there was more technology than we saw in the previous film. The thermal vision was more advanced. So literally, this Predator came to town prepared.
Yeah, they like you said, when we talked about it from part one into part two, it's the evolutionary process of how they learn from every battle they have and every kill they get. They pick something off of their adversary. That's why they go after certain types of people to hunt down that they deem worthy, because they're not only they're hunting for the sport, they're learning from their hunt, because they want to constantly evolve as a species of hunters, which was really cool. Not so much unique, but I just thought, I was like, wow, they really outlaid the process this way in part two, and you can really see it a little bit more, which was just smart writing and smart storytelling.
Yeah, that's what kind of also makes me think what Major said a little earlier, that this Predator was probably a younger Predator, because it did seem like he was, okay, this is what this does, I could do this, and he was learning and learning and learning, while the Predator in the first one was an adult. I already know what to do, I have my traps, I can do this, I can do that. Was like, we see this one adapting in this planet, in this city. It was like, that was really cool to see. And I enjoyed that. I was like, oh, good. They really do adapt. I enjoyed that. I was like, oh, that's cool. Because especially with that scene with him changing his thermal, I was like, okay, now I can see. This is what I need to do. So that was really cool that they added that.
I believe Major pointed that out in part one. TJ, you told us about that, right? Because that Predator was there for a lot longer than he initially thought when he was in Val Verde.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, because doing the history and the research on that for maybe about a good 20-something years prior to 1987, because that's when all the stories came out and the nicknames for the Yautja. So, yeah, it was. But this one seemed like it was just didn't. They weren't on Earth very long, and they just jumped right into it.
Well, I can definitely tell why this guy chose L.A., man. As we're down here talking about this, and I'm walking down the old neighborhoods we grew up in. Man, LA is trashed right now. I mean, this is a war zone. He felt just like home. Just came on down.
The difference between the Predator in the first one and the second one, they both come from the same rank, which are blooded. Now, this one, I believe, obviously he was sent on his own, maybe like a trial or a test among his clan. Every Yautja clan is different. They have the same morals, and the same honor, but just like every job is different. So they have a little tweaks and stuff. So who knows what their moral codes were, at least within that tribe.
True. I mean, Corporal and Major, I love the fact that in this one, per us talking about, you know, the first mission of us being over there in Valverde and getting part one done, they reestablished the whole physicality and the craziness and the abilities and the attributes that these predators have, because there's that one sequence and scene where you see Danny Glover as a detective in this space where these guys get jacked up in a warehouse. And you got to refresh my memory. Again, Major, you know how I am with this, but the second guy in command that was Danny Glover's right-hand dude.
Danny Boy.
Okay, so Danny Boy. How you see Danny Boy tell him, like, hey, man, like, the distance in a space like that, there's no way a regular guy would have been able to do that. That's, like, 20, 30 feet up. This dude's about 230 pounds, and, like, that's craziness.
So what happened to the Scorpio?
Oh, he's out front having lunch. What the hell is this?
I don't know. They've been cut to pieces. Must be the Jamaicans.
This time, but where the hell did they go? Okay, nobody gets in here until forensic arrives. Nobody. Okay, you know the drill. Up there.
Must have been killed out here. Then someone. That's about 35, 40 feet. No rope, no ladder. Guy weighs about 190, 195 pounds. You couldn't carry him up there.
Son of a bitch.
What the fuck is going on?
This is not good, Mike. Not good at all.
And then later on, poor Danny Boy, he suffers the ramifications of that. And a predator picks him upside down and pulls him through that gate and just annihilates homeboy. So I thought that was really cool how they put that all together to establish the... They were explaining the physical attributes through the actions of the predator to you as the movie watcher. That was really cool.
I think we better haul ass, guys. I think we better get the fuck out of here.
What are you hearing, Major?
Again, I don't... Oh, my God. Run, guys. Run! Run! God damn it. I think we're safe right now, guys. All right, let's continue.
Those fucking bastards. I ran so... You made me smash my last pack of ho-hos. You fuckers are dead. Wait until I get a hold... You know what? Nope. Major, go ahead. I need a minute.
Okay. What Zom said earlier, the rooftop scene between the Yautja, or the City Hunter, against Lieutenant Harrigan, I thought that was pretty cool because obviously this is after the slaughterhouse and he removed his biomass. I always wanted, even as a kid, you remember that little oxygen mask that he had and he would just, I don't know, man, that looks so freaking cool. And I was like, every time I remember as a kid, just every time I would breathe into something, like, I don't know, if I'm trying to smell a cereal box, I would do that just like the Predator. It was just so, it was little, but it was still fun.
To coin Corporal Ed, you weirdo.
All right, gentlemen, so we already talked about how Kevin Peter Hall owned this role, right?
Oh, yeah, no question.
And no one else can fulfill his shoes or even come close, right?
Nope.
Of course.
Wrong. And I'll tell you why. So after Lieutenant Harrigan chopped off that hand, and obviously, like we had said, he fell through the bathroom and all this other stuff, yada, yada, yada. Now, there was a stuntman by the name of R. David Smith who played the Predator from that point on to the end of the film. And for the reason why, he only had one arm. They called him the one-armed stuntman. So how they made the costume with the one arm missing and stuff, that made it so much cooler, because for years, you couldn't even tell. Like, I don't know if he was hanging out with Kevin Peter Hall, but this guy was really good and what he was given. Like, that's probably my second favorite portrayal or actor stuntman as the Predator. It was amazing.
Anyone who's a decent actor who knows how that they have to step into the shoes of somebody else who previously did it the best way possible, they're going to pick their brain about it because they're going to try to live up to it as best they can. So you know he had to talk to Kevin and go, would you move this way? Would you move that way? Like, what would you recommend me doing here? Because I'm picking up where you're leaving off and I don't want to mess up what you did. And I want to make sure I do the best I can stepping into the role moving forward for you.
What did you guys notice? I mean,
I saw the difference right away because the other guy was a heavier mover than Kevin.
Correct, but in the costume, the body language, how he presented himself, you couldn't even tell because it was almost identical.
I mean, there's slight differences. There's a little bit more of a bulkiness to this Predator compared to the first one that Kevin was, but Kevin was also portraying a different style of Predator from the first one compared to part two. But again,
No. I was talking about between Kevin Peter Hall and David Smith. Right?
I can tell a little bit just because of it's a little heavier towards the end once you see him fall through the building and all that from where it picks up. The way the cadence is moving, it's a little heavier. It's a very slight notice, not hugely big, but he did really well continuing on.
Because honestly, I didn't notice it at all. Like, I was just like, oh, that's a cool effect, a practical effect, green, like probably put a green screen on his arm or something. I didn't know that was actually a physical stuntman who didn't have his limb.
Did they have green screens back then?
They would have like the sleeve. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah, have a sleeve.
Covered with like a sleeve.
Yeah.
I knew there was a big difference because just the way, for me, the one sequence I saw, just the way he went through a wall, I was like going, oh, yeah, that's a person who has more beef behind them.
Ed, he's a liar.
Major, sir, how can I be a liar when I'm the biggest of this group, too? And I'm pretty sure I can tell the difference of me going through a wall than one of you guys going through a wall. And that's no offense to Corporal, because I know he's skinny swole, but there's a big difference there.
So, I know, Zom, you didn't think Danny Glover as a leading man in this film, but story-wise, you gotta look at it this way. Lieutenant Harrigan, the odds were stacked up against him. He had the shady feds on his ass, followed by two rival gangs, plus an alien, like, wreaking havoc. That would drive anybody nuts, man. I think in the given situation, most normal people would buckle, but I think he handled himself very, I don't want to say professionally, but yeah, he hung in there.
Well, Major and Corporal, I definitely want to point out the fact, I think you mentioned it to us, Major TJ, prior to us doing the episode. I mean, you alluded to the fact that there was supposed to be some type of tag or mention of the fact that Dutch's brother was supposed to be in this, coming to LA to find out what happened with his brother. If they would have included that in part two, even though Dutch wasn't around, it would have tied into the story a little bit more because it would have tailed off bringing part one's continuation into part two, but they didn't do that. That's why I'm saying I wish they would do a bigger unedited cut of the movie because that would be something very important to put in there before I go, okay, cool storyline, awesome.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest issues with the franchise sometimes is they don't always feel connected and they're just like their own stories, which is fine, but you know, it's nice to see those little connected dots moments and interchange them, but it's like, it's like, does this one have to do anything with the first one? I'm not too sure. It's a different Predator, obviously. Like, no mention of Dutch or any type of like, hey, you know, we heard something went down similar to this in Valverde.
It did. Remember when they brought in Lieutenant Harrigan into that little bungalow?
Harrigan, don't you show up in the damnedest places. Come here, Lieutenant. I got something you might find interesting.
What is this?
How many times do I have to tell you? You don't know what you're dealing with. There's your killer. Wonderful, isn't it? Pheromone signature left by his body. These are scent molecules. Punch him. 10 years ago, one of his kind stalked and eliminated an elite special forces crew in Central America. There were two survivors. They indicated that when trapped, the creature activated a self-destruct device that destroyed enough rainforest to cover 300 city blocks. Remarkable weaponry. That's right, Lieutenant. Otherworld life forms.
Huh?
A fucking alien drawn by heat and conflict. He's on safari. Lions, the tigers, the bears. Oh, my.
Trophies. That's the game, isn't it, Keys?
You're the lion. This is his jungle.
So why can't we see him?
Defensive adaptations are astounding. It's somehow able to bend light. Perfect camouflage.
You admire the son of a bitch.
Not what he does, Lieutenant. For what he is. For what he can give us. A new era of scientific technology. I've waited a lifetime for this, and I'm not going to miss the chance.
Mr. Garber, we're picking up something on the pheromone scanners.
Target 1 is on the roof.
It's taken us over 2 weeks to learn his patterns. He comes here every 2 days to feed. Seems he has a taste for beef.
I didn't think he was vegetarian.
Well, we've prepared a little trap for this predator. We are certain that this being can see in only one spectrum of light. Infrared.
Infrared?
He hunts by seeing our heat.
block the heat and he's blind. These suits insulate all body heat, making the team invisible to the creature.
We flooded the packing house with radioactive dust. We've also installed powerful ultraviolet lighting everywhere. Dust adheres to his body, making him visible.
Nitrogen, you're not gonna kill his asshole. You're gonna freeze him.
Well, we have to capture him.
He's moving.
Finally. Grab a seat. Enjoy the show. This is history.
Gary Busey's character, Peter
Keyes. That's right. He
explained everything. Yeah. And if you look at the monitor, they were interrogating Anna from the first film. Just a slight cameo, but yeah. Like, everything that you need to know, and I guess people want more explanation, but everything, that dialogue within that scene, said everything that I needed to know.
Well, Major, I don't think they needed more explanation. I think what Corporal's talking about is, I don't think they framed it enough to where they stopped on it for you to really be able to soak in the atmosphere of what they're outlaying to you storyline wise and then moving forward with it. It was explained, but as it was being explained to you, it was like glanced over.
Exactly. But I want to mention something real quick just for fans that didn't notice it. When Hartigan was in the ship and we see the xenomorph skull, how did you guys react seeing that for the first time? Like, yo, there's a xenomorph skull on the Predator ship.
Well, that's definitely going to tie into the fact of once we eventually talk during the Predathon series ends and we decide to jump into those other movies, you definitely see where that alludes to the forward thinking of them eventually having an alien versus Predator situation happen.
Yeah, we'll talk about those later down the line, if any.
But you guys, like, weren't hyped for it when you first saw that film? Or you're just like, oh, okay, that's there.
I think that's because of that one small scene. If I'm not mistaken, it started the Alien versus Predator toy line. I remember buying those toys.
No, actually, it was...
If I'm not mistaken, the
reason why they did it was actually to promote the comic books. Dark Horse Alien versus Predator was just coming out, so they decided to throw that in there as a little nod to promote the comics.
All right, Corporal and Major, also, since I'm going to throw some nerdiness in there, and I'm pretty sure you guys will be aware of it, I never got to play the video game personally, but before the movies even came out versus Alien versus Predator, didn't they have like a video game that was like Alien versus Predator way before this, the movie story arc even came out because of the comic books and such?
Yeah, it was an arcade game.
Sweet.
Which was...
It was all right.
It was epic. Epic. I pumped so many quarters into that thing. And it, actually, in that game version, was a robotic version of Dutch. I don't even know who the other girl was. I don't know if it was his girlfriend or his partner. But yeah, like, Dutch comes out in the video game.
See, that's really cool there, Major, because, again, that's the forward thinking of fellow nerds like us looking into things. So that definitely tells you that Predator Hunting Grounds, they looked at that. And they added that in the fact at the end of the Dutch tapes, where Dutch refers to the fact that he had some biomechanical surgery done per the advancement of tech they learned from the Yautja, and he had that applied to himself to not only heal him, but prolong his life.
Never connected those.
That's some forward thinking there, Zom.
Man, you're on a roll, buddy.
Hey, I gotta be aware of these things. We're out here in the thick of it with them. I don't know what's scarier, the Yautja guy out here trying to kill everybody or the gangs in the area.
No, it's all the hipsters in this area. That's what it is.
Hipsters we don't have to worry about. We'll just set Major loose on them and he'll plow through them like nothing.
I hate hipsters.
Maybe they stand back, I got these boys, and he'll just go on a hipster annihilation spree.
The Predator's gonna look embarrassed.
The Predator's gonna come down and give him a skull and be like, you're a true warrior there, Major. Annihilation of those hipsters that you pulled off.
You've earned
Yautja pride.
So you can give him a weapon and everything.
Fantastic. Let's also mention too, Major and Corporal, that I think this was the very first time out with Predator, especially with Predator 2, because we haven't seen it in Part 3, and I don't even think later on. Predator 2 is the only movie that I can think of in the series that you see an actual, like, more than one fully naked body, be it male or female.
Wait, are you talking about a human?
Yeah, so the drug lord scene where he was having sex with his girlfriend, you see full on, when he was
banging that one.
Yeah, but what
prostitute.
I'm saying in the movies from first one all the way down the line that we're going to be covering, they prolifically showed it in part two where you see a fully naked woman more than one occasion, and then almost a fully naked man.
That's true.
So that they were definitely pushing the boundaries there. So I can definitely see what Major's talking about, them having that NC-17 rating.
Well, like I said, just overall, this movie was violent. I can only pray like it'll get released somehow in its full NC-17-ness. I doubt it, like Ed said, but I'm just being hopeful.
And the awesome armory they had, guys. I mean,
so what was very interesting about the ending, gentlemen, was that was actually the first time, at least on film, where you saw more than one Yautja. Now, speculations over the years, they were called, well, the Lost Tribe, or my favorite name is called the Los Angeles Hunting Party. That sounds like a hardcore band. So, which consists of 10 Yautjas. So you have Greyback, Boar, Borg, the City Hunter, Guardian, Scout, Shaman, Snake, Stalker, and Warrior. And actually for that end scene, Kevin Peter Hall played Greyback, which was the senior predator.
10 Yautjas. That, if that ain't some hipster sounding names and BS, one little, two little, three little Yautja.
Well, it's funny. No, it's funny because the Shaman predator, his nickname was actually Hippie. And I was like, God damn it, really? Hippie hipsters?
But what was cool about that scene is that those Yautjas were actually the Los Angeles Lakers. Danny Glover was a big L.A. fan, L.A. Lakers fan, and obviously the film taking place in Los Angeles, they were able to get the current roster. Now, unfortunately, they were uncredited, so I'm not too sure what players exactly they got, but you're looking at the Los Angeles Lakers dressed up as Predators in that film.
It's pretty ingenious, too, Major and Corporal, when you think about it, when they were thinking about having all the different tribal members show up for this ending sequence in the movie. Danny Glover, being smart and being budget savvy and conscientious, he realized, because they were scouring around, they were looking for people who were big to play the characters, because they wanted to make sure that they had a big conveyance of like their stature and how they were domineering compared to Danny Glover. So that's why Danny Glover reached out to the Lakers, because he goes, these dudes are all 6'8 plus, they'll look fantastic in stuff. And those guys were like, we're gonna be in Predator 2 with Danny Glover. Hails to the yeah.
I'm pretty sure those guys did it for free, man.
Oh yeah.
I mean, see that? You can find it on YouTube where they're all randomly dancing in like a sequence. I mean, the audio is kind of, I mean, you're gonna have to really pay attention because it's not as good, but it's still fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I mean,
clearly having a blast.
Great sequence.
So I know me and you talked about this. So I know off air, me and Ed had talked about this before. Well, it's mostly like bitching and complaining how when comic books never acknowledge or movies never acknowledge each other living in the same universe.
This film, a little haterade, huh?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But it happens way too often. This film did, and it was little, but still, it was effective. So do you remember at the end when Greyback gave the pistol to Lieutenant Harrigan, you know, and he says, take it, you know?
Okay, who's next?
And it says Raphael Annalini, 1715. Now, that little scene was acknowledging a short story in the comics. Either it came out that year or the year before. I don't remember. A young Greyback fought along with Raphael Annalini. He fought his own men to the death, basically. Because even the murderous pirate had a code of honor. Never steal from the church. And his men were trying to steal from the church. The Yautja had saw that, or Greyback had saw that, and they had each other's back. Annalini unfortunately died, and the last words that he told the Yautja gave him the pistol and said, take it. So to see that play off into the ending of Predator 2 was so good.
Major, that's a dope-ass story arc. Like, I appreciate the fact they actually showed that, because, I mean, that's really cool, because, again, that plays into the fact how you talk about the code of honor that the Yautja has. It's like, it was a form... I mean, this guy was up against a case of mutiny, and he was like, screw that, I'll take all you guys down. And the Yautja's like, well, don't worry about it, son, I got your back, let's do this.
You know, just, they coexisted just for that small moment, and if anybody, I highly recommend to seek out that short story. I believe it's in a little novel with a bunch of random stories. It's maybe only a few pages long, but it is so good. And I, growing up and as I got older, seeing those connections, I'm like, they really did their research on this film. Like, that was amazing.
Yeah, that's dope. That's really dope. I didn't know that. I never got the significance on why that particular pistol, but now that you said that, that's really cool that they actually took the time. Because I'm assuming that book obviously came out pre the film, so obviously the directors and writers were paying attention to little stuff on the side, and unfortunately we don't get that anymore, and that's really awesome that they did that.
And actually, Grayback is probably my second favorite, or he's probably in my top five favorite Predators, and just in general. And just like, you know, I don't know if any of you guys noticed that when you first see him, he actually has a piercing in his mandible. I'm like, dude, this guy's awesome. Rebel.
So, Major and Corporal, I'm thinking we should probably get up and out of here soon. I still hear craziness in the background. They're still kicking off with fight with this gang back here. But I swear I'm hearing something walk up ahead on these building tops as we're down this alleyway, which we probably shouldn't be down in the first place. But before we get down that way of wrapping this up, I did want to let you know, Major, I would say before you do the bookend, we should probably mention the fact that we saw a really cool new Predator weapon in this part too. We saw the actual emergence of the staff they used. Like
the commie
really
stick.
Showed that a lot. It was really cool.
The smart disc, the commie stick.
Dude, that smart disc was wicked, bro. I wish I had one of those.
I'm actually, once again, I have the film on background as we're doing this episode, and it's exactly that scene that's showing up right now.
Fantastic.
Before we go, actually, and that was another thing people were complaining about. So do you remember when Peter Keyes comes back and he says, "Look who's back," and he's like blowing that...
Guess who's back? I want to save your ass. This is between me and him.
Cold air into the Predator's face, and then that's when you see the smart disc, and he cuts through the meat and cuts through the hips, and all you see is just the lower part of him fall. And then you're like, what happened to the topper part? And again, it was something explained in the film, but they cut out the part.
I hate the fact that they do that.
And just because it also made that scene look very sloppy. But when it was actually filmed, but they just never added it.
Well, Major and Corporal, I'm going to say this. Again, it's getting a little too hot over here. No pun intended with that, because I know the Yautja like it. But Corporal, I'm thinking we should probably make our way back to the helicopter, get that bad boy going to get us up out of here. And while we're doing that, Major, if you want to give them the bookend so they have the resource material, I would say give it to them.
You know what? I just want to get the fuck out of here. You know, I'm not going to do the bookend, man. I'm too scared. Let's just get the fuck out of here, guys.
Well, they'll have to find
someone
it.
Someone stole my wallet.
Someone stole your wallet. You're in L.A. What do you think's going to happen? Someone stole your wallet.
Yeah, now I'm sad. Let's just go. I'm not even scared anymore.
Hold on. Corporate, how can you not be aware of your surroundings? We just came out of a freaking jungle and you lose your wallet? Are you serious?
I'm paranoid. I'm safe in the sky. I'm not a ground man. What's wrong with you guys?
Well, much like the last episode, then I gotta watch you guys from behind. You two get going. Head over to the helicopter. I'll watch our back. Let's get the hell out of here, guys.
Let's go
back to the chopper.
Yep, back to the chopper we go now.
Ain't got time to bleed.